Hello and welcome back to Here Come the Sun. I'm your host, Sean Gauthier, and I'm recording on Saturday, September 21st, one day before the first round of the 2024 WNBA playoffs. The Sun finished the regular season in the third seed at 28-12, and they're facing Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark, and the Indiana Fever in the first round of a best-of-three series that starts with two games at home at the Mohegan Sun Arena. To get some context, analysis, and predictions for this first round, I turn to two of my favorite reporters on the Sun beat, Noah Dalzell of SB Nation and Emily Adams of the Hartford Current. I'll be releasing those interviews in two parts, starting with Noah today and Emily tomorrow morning. Before we get to the playoff preview, though, let's do a rapid recap of the last four games of the regular season. So, the Sun toppled the Mercury on Friday, September 13th, winning 88-69 behind a 20-point performance from Breonna Jones, finishing that regular season series with a sweep. They then lost their next two games, losing 84-71 to the Aces and 78-76 to the Lynx. The Aces' loss means that the streak of losses against them since the 2022 postseason continues. The Lynx game was a lot closer, with the Sun getting pretty close to completing an amazing comeback, but ultimately losing in the waning minutes of that game. On Thursday night, the Sun easily beat the Chicago Sky, 87-54. The Sun did have some bright spots in this game, but ultimately this win comes down to the fact that the Sky were down to just eight available players. They were missing major pieces in their lineup, including rookie Angel Reese, who suffered a season-ending wrist injury earlier this month. I'll just say that with these games, unfortunately, there's more to take away from the losses than the wins. The wins come against teams that are riddled with injuries and are also not real contenders for a championship this year. When you look at the losses to the Aces and the Lynx, it shows just how much this team, you know, still needs to get to that next level to make a deep playoff run and to hopefully win a championship this year. You know, they need to look more like they did at the very beginning of the season and less like they have in the past few weeks. Especially when you're, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, they're not playing as well against the major contenders right now. Obviously that Lynx game ended up being close, and they've got a good season record against the Lynx. They've had some really great performances against them this season, and Alyssa Thomas is just known to pick apart the Minnesota Lynx. But at the same time, you know, it's going to require cleaning up some of the mistakes that the Sun are making, especially in the offensive end, and then also keeping up that defensive intensity that has really brought them to this point, getting that third seed and having home court in the first round. Speaking of, it's time to look ahead to the playoffs. So as promised, here is my interview with Noah Dalzell of SB Nation. All right, and now I'm so excited to have a repeat guest, Noah Dalzell. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. What an exciting time to talk about the Connecticut Sun.
Yeah, I'm stoked. We had a listener question last week talking about potential matchups, so I'm excited that we've got the official matchup against Indiana starting this Sunday. I wanted to get your perspective, Noah, especially now that you are, you know, even more so covering the entire league. You'll have a better insight into the Fever and the kind of playoff landscape. So first of all, you know, I said that I thought this would be the most fun matchup of the playoffs if this were the matchup. What do you think in terms of the hype levels for these first round matchups?
Yeah, this is the matchup to watch. And it's not just because the Fever are in it, and I know everybody's excited about watching Caitlin Clark. But these two teams have had some great games, and also I do think this is going to be one of the most competitive series. You know, there are some that are, there's an obvious pick here. I'm sure we'll get more into predictions and things, but there's a lot of intriguing kind of one-on-one matchups. You have Aaliyah Boston and Breonna Jones. You have Dejanay Carrington and Caitlin Clark. There's a lot of fun stuff to talk about, so I think this is going to be the big event on Sunday, and I'm really kind of intrigued to see how the team stack up here.
Yeah, also in terms of just like the storylines, obviously it's always great when you have Dejanay Carrington and Alyssa Smith facing each other on the court, so that's another nice little,
I know.
little matchup thing.
Did and you I feel see like the... for a while, yeah, I feel like for a while it was like, we all saw it online, but it wasn't like an acknowledged thing in the media that they were dating. But now I feel like it's the cat's out of the bag, and so we can talk about it openly. So that is a very, I can't even imagine what it's like to go up in a playoff series or do or die playoff series against somebody that you've been dating for years / potentially she's engaged to. I couldn't gauge from the photos.
Yeah, and there was also, like, The Sun just posted on their social media, like, they were doing, like, a power couple thing, and they posted a picture of Nelissa Smith wearing the same outfit as Dejanay character. I was like, this is so great. It's just like, God, I love this league. But to get to the basketball, so the season series against The Sun and the Fever was 3-1, with The Sun winning the season series. You know, I was noting some of the differences between the games that The Sun won and the games that they lost, but what's one player that you think from the Sun side that might really determine how this series goes?
Yeah, if I had to pick one player, I'm going with Breonna Jones. Because I think that when she's at her best, and she's had a really good stretch recently, so we don't have to go very far back to remember what that looks like. When she's at her best, they are a different team because she has the ability to be one of the league's best top post players, really. I mean, she's an all-star, right? But she hasn't been, she's not always at her best, and that's, you know, it's life. But I think that the game that they played when they lost in Indiana late in August, she had 2 points that game, right? 1 of 6 from the field. And so, to me, like, they don't lose that game. They lost that game by 4. They don't lose that game if she has a normal night. And Aaliyah Boston is also one of the best young bigs in the sport. And so that matchup I'm really intrigued by. And I think that if Breonna can kind of lean on her experience, and, you know, she's obviously been there before. She has a leg up on Aaliyah on that front, at least. That's going to be kind of the matchup that I'm most intrigued to watch. And I mean, there's always, you know, from an offensive standpoint, like, you want to make sure DeWanna Bonner's on, you want to make sure Alyssa Thomas is on, you know, Dejanay Carrington, like, can she get hot? Like, there's a lot of X factors, and nobody's completely reliable offensively on this Sun team, which is, you know, what their issue is, I guess. But I think Breonna would be who I would go with if I had to pick one player.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense too, just because the Sun are obviously not the best 3-point shooting team, and especially not particularly reliable from three across a bunch of games. And so I think it makes sense just to, especially with you know, Breezy being in the paint, scoring those twos and getting the kind of buckets that matters most to this team and the ones that they're kind of like getting the most consistently, that makes a ton of sense to me. One thing from that game in August that I noticed just like diving into the box scores ahead of doing my the preview that I did a week ago was the free throw discrepancy, or not discrepancy, but the difference in the number of free throws that the Sun were taking in their rest of their games against the Fever. They were taking high 20s, low 30s numbers of free throws, and in that most recent one I think they only took 17 and they only made like 9. I'm wondering, what do you think is like the, do you think that running the offense through Breezy helps with something like that, like getting those free throws up and getting those kind of easier buckets for this team in this matchup?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I don't know if you want to run the offense through her. I mean, it does depend on when she has the advantage, and I don't know that the advantage is as obvious with the Fever as it is with some other teams where they don't really have an answer for her size and physicality. And so, to me, it's like, yeah, being aggressive is important, right? And there are certain players that we can count on that will get to the line. Like, Nay is somebody that she's not going to avoid contact, right? Like, she, sometimes I'm like, nothing will stop her from avoiding contact, it feels like. But then there is also, you know, I think from an offensive standpoint, like, when they're at their worst is when they're just not making good decisions on offense. Like, they're throwing bad passes. Like, they are way too good of a team to have turnover-filled stretches the way that we've seen. You know, but really every night there's a stretch like that where they just turn the ball over a couple times in a row. And that, to me, is, like, the X factor as far as, like, if they're going to beat this Fever team, which is a tall task. This is not a regular number 6 seed, considering just the midseason turnaround that they've had. If they are going to beat this team, I think the most important factor will be just taking care of the ball and just getting easy shots. And that's the first good look. Like, how, you know, Stephanie White has talked about it all year, but not passing up an open three for a more difficult shot down the road. And I think a lot of the good things with working through Breezy is that it's a pretty straightforward play. Like, she'll make the right decision. She's not going to overthink it. Where the guards sometimes get caught up, I think, is overthinking kind of what they're going to do and maybe taking a shot or not taking a shot. And next thing you know, you have back-to-back turnovers and the other team's on a run, and it kind of changes the pace and the outlook of the game.
Yeah. Just also thinking about, like, in terms of not passing up, not passing up the easier shots. One thing that I saw the Sun do really well, was it last night that they played? Was it just last night? That was just last night.
Was that last night?
I feel like that was a week ago. I know. They were once again scoring a ton of points on off of turnovers. You know, their defense turning to offense as it usually does. And actually, in that last game against the Fever, they scored more points off of turnovers and more points in the paint than the Fever did. But the thing that I highlighted as like one of the biggest advantages for the Sun was their defense. They still have, or at least last I checked, they still have the best defensive rating, and the Fever are second worst. How much do you think the defense of Dejanay Carrington and Veronica Burton in particular can help slow down Caitlin Clark, and, you know, the defense of the team generally can make a difference in these games?
Yeah, I mean, this is part of what makes this matchup so intriguing, is that the Sun have the personnel to make life difficult for the Fever. Between, I think, you know, Dejanay Carrington obviously gets a lot of the credit well-deservedly, but, you know, you mentioned Veronica Burton. I've been doing a lot of stuff on Defensive Player of the Year and the All-Defensive Team, and no matter what metric I'm using, whether it's defensive win shares or defensive ratings, you know, no matter what you look at in the advanced analytics, Veronica Burton is near the top of the list. Like, she's always, and she's not who I'm looking for, because obviously she's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year. So I have to, like, filter out of the criteria when I'm searching stuff. So she's another great kind of addition to their backcourt. From that standpoint, it's going to be huge. I mean, this is the Sun's DNA. There's been very few games this season where Stephanie White has had anything negative to say about their defense. Like, their defense is something that is a coach's dream, the consistency with which they come out and defend. And the problem is that when you have Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Mitchell as hot as they've been since the Olympic break, and they've been the second and third leading scorers in the entire league since the Olympic break, it doesn't always matter if you play good defense. That's kind of the challenge, right? So Kelsey Mitchell has had some games where I'm like, you could put the best defender in the world on her. You know, she's not even really seeing them. She's just seeing the basket the size of the ocean, and Caitlin Clark as well. And so they're going to give the Fever a run for their money, and I think that's why I'm really glad that the Sun are playing the Fever in the first round, because it's going to make that series so difficult. But it might not be enough. Not that they're not going to win, but I think that Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Mitchell are still going to get theirs, regardless of how great the Sun backcourt defenders are.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, I think I use the cliche of defense wins championships, but also it only wins championships if you're also scoring. If you're, you know, you can hold them as much as you want, but if you're not scoring more still, then you know, you're not going to make it. And speaking of scoring, I noticed, like, for, again, I can't believe it was just last night, but last night's game, Dawana Bonner was hot in that game, and obviously they've been coming off. They were coming off of two straight losses, not the best stretch heading into the postseason. But, you know, you said it earlier. It's like the offense of the Sun is kind of offense by committee rather than having like the one or two hot players. Who do you? You know, we've talked about Breezy. Who else do you think, like, needs to get hot for at least one of these games heading into this series?
Yeah, I mean, again, they're such an interesting team. Like, they really are so egalitarian offensively that it's always hard to pick one. And even when I'm writing, I'm like, who do I put in the headline? Like, they all had 12 points, you know, like, that happens all the time. I think Marina Mabry is obviously going to be really important. They brought her in for offense. They brought her in for when things get stagnant. And she has delivered. I mean, she's been really, really good since getting acquired by Connecticut midseason. I think I've even seen Sky fans kind of complaining, like, where was this in the first half? Like, she's been in a great groove. So she's up there. But I want to say, if I had to pick one person where, like, this person needs to be on for them to advance here, it's probably Dawana Bonner, because at the end of the day, like, she has been their leading scorer for the last couple seasons here, and she, you know, when she's really struggling, like, you can tell it, you know, it changes her decision making. It really gets to her. It's not like any you know, everybody gets impacted, obviously, when their shot's not falling. But you can see, I'm always amazed. I'm like, you're the third leading scorer in WNBA history. You know, it's like, how are you even rattled? But it's just, you know, it's the nature of basketball, obviously. But I would love to see her come out the gate in a good rhythm and in a good flow, because they are a different team when she is kind of asserting herself and hitting threes. And I've covered games of hers this year where she could miss, and I've covered games of her where she couldn't even hit the rim. And it's just kind of wild that it's the same player. I think her extremes are very apparent. And so I think she will step up. I mean, she has the experience. The light's not too bright for her. She's obviously been there before. But, you know, Marina has been more consistent. So I feel like I know what to expect from her over the last few weeks, at least. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dawana, which version of her are we going to get? And I have a feeling it'll be the version of her that's made her the all-time great that she is.
Yeah, and you spoke about that experience and the lights not being too bright. And I was thinking about that too, because, you know, this is a team of vets. Like, you brought it up, but, you know, this team's been to, I think this is their seventh straight season in the playoffs. And honestly, probably even more for Bonner and Thomas and Breonna Jones, especially with, you know, Bonner having been traded over. And it's like, how much, I mean, I guess it's not really a question you can answer, but I'm wondering, like, I wonder how much the, you know, that experience, that first playoff experience, that first time in these bright lights, or, you know, the first time for the Fever in a while where there's expectations on their playoffs. And I know that those expectations may have been heavy for them at first in the season, but they've been carrying those expectations well for the second half of the season.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because on paper, I'm like, okay, the Sun experience is going to weigh, you know, be so much stronger than the Fever is because the Fever are so young. But I also do believe that this Indiana team is not going to show up rattled at Mohegan Sun. I think that they've been playing in front of sold out crowds at the Gainbridge Fieldhouse all year. Individually, we're talking about, you know, Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark, players that have been in national championship games. Like, this is not the first time they've been playing high stakes basketball. So the Sun have the edge from an experience standpoint, but considering how inexperienced this Indiana Fever team is, I don't think it's going to be as much of a disadvantage in reality than it might be on paper. And so I almost kind of like when I'm working on my big WNBA playoff preview right now, and I'm like, is experience a massive edge that you give Connecticut? Because they haven't gotten over the hump yet. You know, this group hasn't. Obviously, Dawana has one. But, you know, it's tough to think about how do you kind of balance all those factors, considering I do think, like, Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston, and those two in particular, and obviously Kelsey Mitchell as well, but those two have been at some of the highest stages in all of basketball in the last few years. I feel like this is not going to be much different for them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And then I think it's time to just do it. No, I think we've got to hear your prediction here. I already predicted that the Sun are going to win. I think you brought up the Gainbridge Arena, and I was saying I think not having to be there for those first two games is pretty massive. So I was saying, you know, combo of home court, that veteran experience, and the defense for me was enough for me to call it that the Sun are going to win this one. But what is your prediction for this first round?
Yeah, my prediction is Connecticut in two, but I do think that if they lose one of those two games, I'm going to shift my prediction and say that the Fever are going to win in three. So they really have to get it done at home. And I know that in recent years, they've relied on that extra game to get it done on the road to get out of the first round. I think you really have to avoid that if you're Connecticut here, because that's going to be a really tough one to beat. All of the momentum's going to be on Indiana's side. The whole world's going to be on Indiana's side, it's going to feel like. But I think they'll get it done. I think they'll come out and they'll win those two games, because to, you know, the one thing about Indiana, and I'm a big fan of theirs, and it's been fun to watch that team. They're very captivating, but they had a really, really difficult start to the year, which also means they've had a much easier part of their schedule as of late. And the Sun were kind of the opposite, where they had an easy start to the season. And so a lot of the trends, and obviously the Fever have gotten a lot better and Caitlin Clark's figured things out, but they also, like, the Fever just lost two games to the Aces. Like, when they've been up against better teams, they lost to the Lynx. Obviously they beat the Sun recently, but it's not like they've been dominating the best teams in the league. They've been really feasting on the less good teams too. So I think that you'll see that maybe things are exposed when they're playing against the league's best defense, the same way that it was playing against these more elite teams. So that's my prediction, but I wouldn't be shocked if I'm totally wrong here in the Fever win. I think this is the most uncertain of the first round series.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think the Sun basically have to win it at home. I think you got to take the two that you've got
yeah.
and make it count, because I mean, the noise, the environment, you know, the noise in the room and on TV and in the media spaces would just be, it'd be a lot of additional pressure and outside, you know, again, noise that would just add so much to it. I think also just speaking of noise, we talked about this a little bit before we jumped on, and I've been seeing you post on Twitter a lot lately talking about hate and harassment of players, kind of across sports. But, you know, one thing that I mentioned going into this matchup is that, as I've been describing them, people who say that they are Caitlin Clark fans online have been particularly hateful online towards players that, especially players matched up against Caitlin or really just whomever the star player is of the opposing team, when they're not, you know, dumping on Aaliyah Boston or her own teammate online. And so, you know, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind just like sharing a little bit of your thoughts on that. I saw that you were saying, you know, some ideas around how fans who are not spreading hateful messages online, how we should, you know, be approaching these types of conversations online.
Yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, this has been a big topic in the WNBA as of late, because with, like you said, you know, with more eyes, you now have a lot more people buying tickets and buying jerseys, but also a lot more people kind of riding the way that we talk about fandom and the way that we behave as fans in society is really dehumanizing athletes. And that comes with a lot of negative consequences that I think NBA athletes have been kind of trained and taught to minimize and, you know, and not really lead into and not let the noise in. But I really do think that nobody likes to go online and see the kinds of messages that NBA and WNBA players receive on a regular basis now. And there's a lot, you know, we could probably talk about this forever. So I think the main thing that I would say is that this season, because of all the increased attention, you saw like maybe a league and a media landscape that was not prepared to deal with all of that. And that's the thing that, you know, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on all the player protocols and all the training that's going on behind the scenes, but it was very obvious. And I think last night's press conference with the Chicago Sky, it was very obvious that this has been getting to players and that it's been impacting them. And it's not just like you suck, but it's racism, it's harassment. It's, you know, Diamond DeShields fouled Caitlin Clark earlier, you know, last month, and her entire Instagram, every single post was inundated with comments saying that they wish a tumor that she had would have taken her out, like just vile things. And so the reality is like I covered the Celtics during the NBA season. And so I've seen all the stuff on the NBA side, and now I'm covering the WNBA and I'm seeing it again here. And a lot of people will say like, hey, this is just the way that athletics goes. And this is the way that the NBA is. And so if these players want to get paid and they want to be professionals, like they have to accept that this is how they're going to be treated. And I think we really need to flip that on its head and say like, hey, maybe this is a moment to actually think about like how we talk about NBA players too. And maybe now that we're kind of thinking critically about starting a new league, I mean, not that the league is new, but you know, so much new attention and so much new media attention in particular, mm-hmm. like this is an opportunity to stop all that. So it's never going to go away. And that's the thing, you know, a lot of people have already reached out to me and been like, hey, like nice idea, but there's always going to be online trolling. There's always going to be hate. And that's true. But I also think that there's a lot of people, maybe Chicago Sky fans, I saw people on my feed last night being like, oh, they weren't referring to me. But I think internally, some people were like, oh, shoot, like I did kind of go at these players' necks a couple times. Like I did say some things that maybe I would take back. And so my mentality has always been like, if you put something online, whether it's commenting on someone's post or tweeting something, like you have to think to yourself, like, would you say it to that person's face? And I think normally people wouldn't say that. And that's why like we kind of hide behind player avatars and, you know, nameless accounts and things. And I haven't dealt with it. I'm not a famous basketball player, but I wrote an article calling it out, and I dealt with a microcosm of what I would imagine the players deal with. And that was enough for me to realize like, wow, you know, I didn't realize that there were people that not only message you once, but message you every day for 2 weeks, something vile, you know? So it made me realize like, damn, like the dedication to being a jerk is a lot more intense than I had imagined. So I can't even imagine, you know, if there's a player you hate, like, these players might be hearing from the same people over and over and over again. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a longer term conversation. And maybe this is a conversation that extends beyond basketball, beyond sports, more about kind of how we navigate online spaces. But certainly I think the season was a moment in time because of all the attention that came in with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Like, there was a lot of different moving pieces to it. And it's not about, like, Caitlin Clark fans are racist. I think sometimes that got misconstrued in, like, what I was trying to say. It's about the fact that she had some people in her fan base, as every player does, but they were really empowered to be racist. And it wasn't her fault, and it's not something that she said. I think she denounced things when she had the opportunity to. And so I don't know why people are so sensitive about being like, hey, like, some people are crossing the line. Like, if it's not you, you shouldn't be defensive about it. That's what I always think.
Yeah, and that's kind of why, like, earlier, you know, I did the, obviously this is all in audio format, but I did my little quote hands earlier when I was saying, you know, people who say they are Caitlin Clark fans, or I may have said, like, people whose photos on Twitter make them look like Caitlin Clark fans, because, you know, I think that there's also a part of this where it's like, for the hateful and especially the, like, racist and homophobic people on the internet, like, Caitlin Clark gave them, without her intention or behind it, gave them a picture to, you know, to say, you know, this is the ideal, and created a space for them to have another reason to attack women, black women, and especially and queer women online. And that it has in so many ways, like, had nothing to do with Caitlin Clark. Like, I can't imagine a lot of these, especially guys, are, like, sitting down and watching regular season games. I just, like, refuse to believe it. I think that they're just finding another reason to scream on the internet and be jerks online.
And I think the other thing is, like, there are a lot of people that have said to me, hey, like, I'm watching women's basketball for the first time. Like, I'm learning about all these other players. You know, I came in a Caitlin Clark fan. Now I'm a Kelsey Mitchell fan, or now I'm a fan of an entirely new team. And, like, that's what we want, right? We want to see all that good stuff come with the growth. And yes, that means that if you're tuning into a Chicago Sky game, you're now more likely to criticize those players. And so there's always going to be the flip side. But there is no reason that we have to accept. And I think anytime you're talking about something new, like, before I was a reporter, I was a lobbyist, and I worked about, like, creating, like, climate technology. And we talked a lot about, like, when you're creating a new industry, you have the chance to reimagine, like, how is this going to work? Like, when you're talking about scaling up a tech that doesn't currently exist, like, maybe we do things with a different workplace standard. Maybe we think about how people treat one another, what the work week looks like. Like, you have the opportunity to reinvent the wheel, and that's kind of how I view the WNBA a little bit. Like, it's not brand new, obviously, but we have an opportunity to say, like, hey, this is not going to be that kind of league. Not like, hey, that's the way that NFL went, so we have to go in that direction too. Like, there's an opportunity to avoid that.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, you are now a professional reporter. I'm still just a fan. And, right, like, from my perspective, there's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of sports rivalries that run deep for me. But, like, I just can't imagine jumping on Twitter and just saying the absolute worst thing about a player just because they played for the Yankees or because they play for the Lakers, or, you know what I mean? Like I have nothing but good things to say about Asia Wilson. I think she's incredible, and I want her to have a terrible game every time she plays against the Sun, right? Like, that's how right. It's supposed to work. You boo them, you know, in the space of the sport, you make jokes. You know, whenever Aaron Judge strikes out, I laugh about it. There's a Twitter account I follow literally called "The Yankees Lose," and they just post a GIF every time the Yankees lose. It's great. That's the kind of sports hatred. You don't need to Google who their family is and start sending them, like, you know, mail up to their house. Like, yeah, it's just wild. I don't know how we get away from it. I loved your tweet about just, you know, calling it out, not retweeting it, not trying to re-spread hate. I think that's something we all need to do generally about things that make us mad online, because part of what they're doing is trying to get us to share the thing that they're saying to make us mad. But yeah, thank you for talking about that. You know, I feel like you in particular, and also just, you know, women in the sports media space, and also just the WNBA space has created a place for us to have these kinds of conversations about the intersections of kind of culture and our cultural environment and sports at the same time, in a way that was a lot more niche or specific across other sports that I've kind of, like, followed and followed along the journalism for. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no, thank you. And honestly, I think the line between fan and media member is more blurred than ever with the rise of social media and podcasts and things. So I view what you're doing of just being able to talk about this team and provide a space for fans who want to tune in, like, as equally valuable. And I think that each of us, like, it's never going to be, for a lot of people reach out to me and say, like, hey, we're never going to be able to fix, like, Twitter or, like, online culture. But I think that even if 10% of the people that were participating don't participate because they thought about it a little bit differently and they heard people that they respect say something, like, that's a big difference still. And, you know, it can be incremental progress. It doesn't need to be like black and white. So I hope, yeah, I think it's heading in the right direction because there's a lot of thoughtful people and players involved in this league. So as much as there's been challenges this season, I think that the fact that there's so much backlash is a good thing because it shows you that this, you know, it's not something that people want to accept.
Yeah. Well, Noah, thank you so much for being the first repeat guest on Here Come the
Oh
Sun.
yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for joining me. And you know, you've had a bunch of new news in your own career. I mean, in the past couple months. Would you want to share with the Here Come the Sun listeners where they should be looking to find your work these days?
Yeah, I would say two places. So if you are looking for WNBA coverage, I will be traveling all around the WNBA playoffs for the next month, and all my coverage will be at espnation.com/WNBA. So you can follow along there. You can find me on Twitter, where I'll be posting all those stories and tweets and videos and things from those games, Noah Dalzell. And then if you are a Celtics fan, which I would imagine there is some overlap between the Sun and the Celtics fans, I also have a new Celtics podcast called You Got Boston that I will be coming out with regular episodes throughout training camp. So this next month, I got you on the WNBA side and on the Celtics side, and I will somehow find a way to make that work.
Incredible. Well, Noah, I'll make sure to put those links all in the show notes, and just want to say thanks again for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you again to Noah Dalzell for being the first repeat guest here on Here Come the Sun. Check the show notes to follow Noah on social media and to read her work covering the Sun and the WNBA for SB Nation. Also, make sure you tune in tomorrow to hear part two of our playoff preview, my interview with Emily Adams of the Hartford Current. I'll be releasing that early, early in the morning, so you have plenty of time to listen ahead of game one at Mohegan Sun at 3 p.m. That's all for this episode. As a reminder, if you want to hear your voice on the show, please leave us a message at 617-903-7683. It can be a question for me or for an upcoming guest. It can be a celebration from a game. You know, it can be your thoughts on the most recent game. Anything you want, I'd love to have your voice here on the show. You can also send us an email at ctsunpod@gmail.com or DM us on social media at ctsunpod. If you're a regular listener, please help spread the word about the show to other Sun fans in your network. You know, tell a seat neighbor at one of these playoff games coming up, or, you know, share it with friends or family. You know, it's really going to help grow the show and get more incredible guests like Noah and Emily on the show for future episodes. If this is your first episode you've listened to, welcome. Please subscribe wherever you get podcasts or on YouTube and join the Here Come the Sun community. All right, that's it from me. I will talk to you early tomorrow morning here on Here Come the Sun.